Welcome to this week's installment of Cultural Conversations. You can leave questions and comments at our Facebook page at facebook.com/culturalconversations. Is the world coming to a cataclysmic end this year? According to many doomsday believers, the classical Maya, living between AD 250 and 900, predicted the end of the world as we know it for December 21st. All you have to do is Google Mayan doomsday, and a myriad of websites come up with site developers' interpretations of the Mayan calendar and their suggestions to prepare for the end. Doomsday prophecies such as this date all the way back to the death of Jesus and continue to manifest in various forms. Self-proclaimed prophets predict events through visions, while others forecast the end of the world based on their interpretation of symbols from the natural world or written records. Most recently, Harold Camping, who heads the Family Radio Christian Network, predicted a judgment day for May 21st last year, where around 200 million would be saved and go to heaven, while all others, or sinners as he put it, would be left behind. When May 21st came and went, no less after many believers had quit their jobs and sold their earthly possessions, Camping proclaimed October 21st to be the day when God would completely destroy the earth. Other groups have taken more deadly paths in fear of an ensuing cataclysm, such as the Heaven Gates group led by Marshall Applewhite. So convinced the world was going to end in 1997, 39 Heaven's Gate members committed suicide along with Applewhite. But today, we're going to be sorting fact from fiction in regard to the Mayan doomsday prophecy. Do ancient Mayan texts foretell our doom? Did they predict the end of the world for later this year? Discussing this today, we have Mayanist archaeologist Dr. Jeb Card, currently teaching at Miami University in Ohio. Welcome, Jeb.
Hi. Hello.
Well, first, let's get started here. You know, Mayans are exciting to Westerners, but what specifically excites you about them as an archaeologist?
Well, I mean, I can tell you how I got into it, and that's it is the writing. You know, it's the centerpiece of all this 2012 stuff. It's the calendar, it's the writing, and that's certainly what hooked me. I mean, I wanted to be an archaeologist back in college. There were a couple of topics, and then I took a course with Jeremy Sabloff, who was a professor at the University of Pittsburgh at that time, and he was very enthusiastic, but it was just the writing. And then I later took courses with Terry Kaufman, who's a Maya epigrapher, amongst other things. And it was, I think, really that boundary between science and history. It's what had brought me to archaeology in the beginning, and the fact that we had in the Americas a deep historical, and I mean historical not just in the past, but having written record, a deep historical trajectory, legacy, in the Maya especially, but in larger Mesoamerica, that's something that really attracted me. In other work I've done, I've worked on early colonial settlements in Mesoamerica, and it's that same kind of frisson, that same kind of boundary between mm-hmm. before history and after history, and I think that's very much something that attracted me early on. I mean, plus, you know, pyramids are awful cool.
How would you describe to listeners who the classical Maya were? Like, where did they live? What did they do? What did they believe?
Well, there's first one thing I want to say that's kind of a sort of a tangent to that, and there's this whole idea of the Maya as a collapsed civilization or a disappeared people. And, of course, the thing we have to remember is that there are roughly 8 million Mayas today. Mm-hmm. The term is Maya and Mayas, not Mayan. You see that a lot. Occasionally you can use that term with linguistics and whatnot. But there are 8 million Mayas today in Mexico, Guatemala, in the United States, Honduras, of various countries. And that has to be remembered. They're mm-hmm. not a disappeared people. They're a human people, just
sure.
like we are, just like everybody else.
Sure.
And they have their past and they have their present. And I think we really have to remember that. Now, that said, these texts and this writing system we're talking about, they are largely centered on a time period that archaeologists have called for a long time the classic. And you mm-hmm. mentioned about 250 to 900. Depending on who you want to talk to, those vary, but those are good. Those are pretty good mm-hmm. boundaries. 250 to 900 AD or CE in the Common Era. We now know that there was also society and civilization, urban and possibly literate and probably complex state-level class-based society for several hundred years before that. That initial definition was based on when we had the earliest writing. Well, now we have Maya writing going several centuries back into the 3rd and 4th century BC. But it's a time period when you had large urban cities, governments, even what appears to be alliances or what you might call, you know, small conquest empires, centered around numerous cities in Guatemala, in the Yucatan Peninsula of Mexico, in parts of Honduras and El Salvador, and also in the states, the state of Chiapas in Mexico as well, to the west of Guatemala, with various Maya languages. There's something, depending on how you want to define it, between 23 and 28 Maya languages. There are some in the highlands, up in the mountains of Guatemala. But when we say classic, we're really usually talking about the rainforest, the tropical forests of Belize, northern Guatemala, and parts of Mexico. And there were these city-states that sometimes formed larger governments. And these governments were formed around a title, an individual known as an ahau. It's a lord or a king, and they sometimes were ranked. There are records that are sort of like feudal records saying, Iahau, that's his king, you know, in sort of a superiority, sovereignty, and then, you know, secondary a ruler kind of sense. But they were the leaders. They were often called Ulahau, Holy Ahau, holy lords. And they were believed to have direct connections to the gods, to creation, that they're shown holding symbols of the universe.
Sure.
And all of this as these centerpieces. Some have talked about Maya statecraft as being very, very theatrical, and I think that that's accurate. You see these huge backdrops of sculptures and color and all of this theatricality, never mind some of the more grisly things like theatricality and blood spectacle of letting your own blood or the blood of others,
right,
because it was considered a holy symbol. And that tie into the gods and into the cosmos that these Maya kings, just like, you know, Egyptian pharaohs did, that is actually to some degree kind of where the 2012 thing sort of comes from.
Now, I know, you know, they had different types of calendars. Some were ritually oriented, others, like the calendar round, equated to one generation. But the calendar in debate is the long count calendar. How did this operate differently than the other calendars they had at the time?
Well, the big difference is that it's linear. All three of these work together.
Okay.
Pretty much throughout the area of Mesoamerica. Now, Mesoamerica is a larger area that incorporates most of modern Mexico and then all of the area that I mentioned previously. So it's a large area, and it's the land of the Aztecs or the Olmecs,
sure,
or the Zapotecs, any of these people. They're all Mesoamerican. They all have many cultural similarities. It's like talking about, for example, people in various European societies. They may not have all the same language. They may not have all the same exact religion, exact concepts, but there are some similarities you can see.
Sure.
But a big regional thing. You see these large regions around the world. All throughout this area, you mentioned the calendar round, and that's two sequences, two cycles. Now, amongst the Maya, one of them is called the Hob. That's the actual name for it. The other one we call the Tzolk'in. That's kind of a name that's actually been cobbled together by scholars. But the one that's called the Tzolk'in is a 260-day calendar. It's often called a sacred calendar. And that has been kept to the present.
Okay.
You know, you can find daykeepers in the Guatemalan and Mexican highlands that have continued the daykeeping to the present. And that's 260 days. And that roughly is similar maybe to the solar zenith, the passage, you know, during the year, the sun at its height. But probably the closest thing is that it's also close to the 266-day cycle of human gestation, of human pregnancy. And that does seem to be likely a connection there. The other one, the Hob, as the Maya called, is 365 days. 365 days of 20-day months, 18 of them, and then one 5-day cycle, sort of a period of uncertainty at the end of the year, they called Waya. But those repeat.
Mm-hmm.
The Hob repeats every 365 days. The Tzolk'in every 260. Now, those two, you can combine them, and the same day in both will only occur every 52 years. There's some math in there. I'm not going to get into it. But every 52 years, it's called a calendar round. And it was also roughly contemporary. You know, it was kind of thought of as sort of a human lifespan.
Right.
And in fact, in some societies, if you lived past 52 years, you were kind of retired. And
right,
you got like special privilege. You could drink more, if
right,
nothing else, outside of festival days. The long count, though, that is more like when we say something like BC or AD. It's a linear, literal count of days.
Okay.
And it was anchored to August 11, 3114 BC, so the year 3114 BC, about 5,000, a little under 5,200 years ago. It was anchored then as sort of a zero. Now, they never wrote it as zero, which is also important to the whole 2012 thing.
Right.
But basically, once that starts, every day clicks along further, and that long count counts those. It records those. And so you could record a very specific date, so not just every 52 years, but in that vast cycle. And the 13th of what's called a Bakhtun, a big, roughly 400-year period, is the thing that's coming to an end in December.
Okay, so is that like a cycle is ending and then a new one will begin, or is that where what the big question is?
Well, that's the thing. You see, that's the thing. I mean, where does this whole, you know, it's the end of the world or a new creation or anything that come from? And what it is that there are no texts. This is something I want to make very clear. There are no texts in Maya anything that date back to 3000 BC.
Okay.
The first Maya texts, the oldest ones we have, are more like 300 BC, and they only start to become significantly common after about 380. They're not that common before then. The long count, as far as we can tell, is developed sometime in between those two, maybe around 200 BC. The first writing at all in Mesoamerica is about 500 or 600 BC at the oldest that we can find. I mean, that may change, but there's no evidence it's going to go back. They chose it much later.
Mm-hmm.
So the earliest dates, you know, if there's 13 Bakhtuns, the earliest dates start usually, I think, with sevens and then eights. So they're much further along. So that 13 is kind of in there because there are texts that write about kind of what we might call mythological time.
Right.
And in fact, what's interesting is a lot of this, you know, the one piece that the one monument, we'll talk about this, but the one monument that mentions this date is from a part of the world where they kind of often talked about mythological time for political purposes.
Oh, okay.
But these texts that talk about mythological time, they have a previous creation, a previous time ending at the 13th Bakhtun. And so the idea would be when we click into 13 again, you know, that's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that would be. But the thing is, there are texts that have vast sums of time. There is something called a distance number. Distance numbers are connectors. You know, if I say a week from now, that would be like a distance number. And that's a very common way of structuring a Maya text.
Okay.
There's a distance number at Palenque. It's over a million years long.
Wow.
Never mind 5,200 years, over a million.
Right.
There's a time period. I think it's an octillion. I don't even know what an octillion is, but there are texts in northern Mexico, or not northern Mexico, but the northern Yucatan Peninsula, at Coba, for example, that are just 20 zeros. I mean, not even our zeros, but their zeros, which is, you know, I'm not going to get into all the math. Far bigger than the cycles we're talking about. So the question is, you know, what comes after the 13th Bakhtun? Well, of course, the thing is that without any real significant texts talking about this, there's not a lot to say except that, you know, there's a joke. You know, you hear a lot of people say, oh, well, they ran out of room on stone. Well, you know, I understand it's a joke, but that's not it. I mean, they have stones that go far, far longer. So
sure.
It's not the end of the Maya calendar in any real sense like that.
Okay.
It's simply one period ending.
Is there a scholarly consensus on what this particular calendar says? Or
That's the thing. I mean, you know, there's a long history of people trying to look at certain things in Maya writing and whatnot, and they often see in apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
And the first really significant that I am aware of attempt to try to link this to destruction was in the 1960s by an archaeologist, my archaeologist by the name of Michael Coe, emeritus from Yale. And he wrote, and a number of things, but especially a popular book called The Maya. It's like in its eighth or ninth edition now, and it says it in all of these. I actually found an early edition and looked at it. Sort of kind of offhand says, well, could this be a destruction? And what he's referring to is there is a common concept in Mesoamerican thought that you have multiple creation. And I already mentioned that in terms of the mythological texts reaching back into a previous one, where you have the world that is created and then destroyed. And there are creation stories that we'll talk about. You know, the gods, they want to be honored, so they create beings, intelligent beings, to honor them, but they're not quite right. So they destroy the world, and they, you know, it's kind of like they shaking up a snow globe and starting again. So they keep doing that. So you have that, and you do have the idea that that will happen in the future. And there are ideas, for example, the Aztecs, one of the reasons that they did a lot of human sacrifice, although they were certainly not the only Mesoamericans to do so, was in part to make sure that, for example, the Tzitzit Mitl, these although there's some controversy about this, but maybe these sky demon things, you know, didn't end the world, because the world could end. And so you look at that and you're like, okay, so there's this concept that the world is destroyed and created every so often, and you've got a big period ending coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, could the two be? And so Coe kind of suggested that, and that's where the trouble started.
Oh, okay.
Because he suggests that in the 1960s, and I suggest that he suggests this in the 1960s. That is part of the problem, as you know, it got picked up by people like Terence McKenna, who was big into studying psychedelics, and he had these various kind of prophesizing the beginning and ending of Western civilization using early computing programs and algorithms, and it got picked up into the New Age community, into that. But today, in terms of consensus, there seem to be two basic reads on this. Specifically, there is one text. It's a monument from the city of Tortuguero in Mexico, and it's the only one that refers to this date. And some have read it and basically said it's just commemorating other dates. In fact, it's sort of a narrative way of commemorating the creation of the building that the text was once in. The building has since been destroyed. It was an interior lintel, just like a panel,
mm-hmm.
just an interior writing. Others have said, well, look, this actually does look like it is possibly suggesting something important happening on that date, but it may just be the appearance of one of the gods that is involved in creation, and it may just be a way. The concept of prophecy is a very Western idea. And what you often had in Mesoamerican and Maya thought was not, this will happen, this is a prophecy, but instead, what happened the last time we came up with this date? You know, what happened the last time this particular date came around? So, for example, if you wanted to make an equivalent, in the United States, the 1860s was a very tumultuous time politically.
Right.
Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
The 1960s was a very tumultuous time politically. Civil rights movement, the Vietnam War, the Women's Liberation Movement, all kinds of things were going on. You could go and say from that principle, the 2060s, there may be a lot of political turmoil at that time.
Right.
It would be something along those lines. And we see that from other texts. So it's not so much prophecy. It's more kind of looking at what you have from history and saying, can it give us any insight into the future? So there's been some suggestion that, well, since that is a date similar to the one at that transition, could that happen? So you could see it as almost a speculative in that sense. You know, will this god appear? But there's been a lot of changes in it, and some authors have initially thought maybe there was something to it, and then they've looked at it and gone back and said, I don't think there is.
Okay. Well, so how does December 21st factor into this?
Well, it does translate. I mean, there are two basic calibrations of the long count to our calendrical system. The long count is, again, this long count of dates. The most commonly accepted would put it on December 21. The other would put it on December 23. It's literally only a two-day difference. And the December 21 one is particularly interesting because, of course, that's going to put it on the solstice, on the winter solstice. And solstices, as well as other phenomena like Venus cycles, eclipses, were of great interest to the Maya. I mean, of the three significant, the really detailed surviving Maya books, there were many more Maya books, but they were destroyed during the Spanish conquest of Mesoamerica. We've also found ones that were probably books, and they're found in archaeological context, but they're so destroyed, they're not readable.
Mm-hmm.
They would have been plaster on either tree bark or on deer skin, and they just, you know, you put that in a humid tropical rainforest soil, it's not going to survive. The books we have, they all are largely astrological almanacs to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're interested in eclipses, and there are eclipse tables and Venus cycle tables. So having this happen on the winter solstice is not a terrible surprise.
Okay. So when a layperson comes up to you and knows obviously what you do for a living, and they ask you, what's going to happen on December 21st? I mean, you know, how do you give that bullet point explanation or to reassure him? You know, it's okay.
The one takeaway, like, you know, like the elevator speech.
Right, exactly.
That I would mention that the Maya had far longer periods, and that they might have looked at it as a time to be concerned about such things, But the idea of it being a prophecy and it tying into all sorts of other stuff, and never mind any kind of specific apocalypse. You know, you always hear about, oh, there will be a, you know, a gamma ray burst, or there will be tsunamis, yeah. or there will be an earth. None of that is in there. None of that is in the text. That is all people adding that on from whatever their current modern fears, or frankly, in some cases, fantasies.
I appreciate you taking the time to talk about this in your work today.
Sure,
I know I've learned a great deal, and we'll see what happens in December.
Thank you for listening to Cultural Conversations, edited by Sarah D'Elia and Blake Lau. Join me every Thursday for a new installment of the podcast at nipr.fm to learn more about this beautiful human mosaic. You can leave questions and comments at our Facebook page at facebook.com/culturalconversations.